This episode is brought to you in part by Zondervan, publisher of Ghosted, An American Story, written and narrated by New York Times best-selling ghostwriter Nancy French, and is available everywhere audiobooks are sold.
Dynamic voices for a diverse church. This is Pass the Mic.
Greetings and God bless. Welcome to another episode of Pass the Mic, Dynamic Voices for a Diverse Church, powered by the Reformed African American Network. I'm your host, Tyler Burns. You can follow me on Twitter at Burns23. Follow at your own risk. And joining me, as always, is the president of the Reformed African American Network, Jamar Tisby. Jamar, what's your Twitter handle? Since, you know, you were salty last time that I keep giving my Twitter handle, but you don't give yours. So go ahead.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, longtime listeners know by now, and I echo your sentiments. Follow at your own risk. But it is at Jamar Tisby, at Jamar Tisby.
You got the simple handle. Like, see, the 23 people have asked me, like, what's the 23? Is that like the 23rd Psalm or not? Nah, I was just, it was actually, Gordon. No, it wasn't even that. It was my dorm in college. Like, I lived in the 23rd so dorm. So I was just like, all right, 23.
You should make up a better story than that.
I'm dead serious. That's it. Like, there's no nothing. And I've kept it this entire time. I've not changed it. I've never changed it. It's nuts.
Oh my goodness. That is anticlimactic. But
wow. Hey, so it is what it is. I'm gonna come up with something like super woke to describe like 23. And I'm gonna be like, yo, it was like, and I hate using that word woke, by the way. We might need to get into that today. Like, why I don't like woke.
Look, I'm ready if you ready.
Okay, all right. We're gonna get into that a little bit later. All right, put a pin in that. That's
here
so funny.
Is, finally, the woke episode.
Bo said he wanted to be on this one, so
he's
going to be salty when he finds out we're talking about woke.
Oh, man.
But yeah, I'm going to come up with something really, really Afrocentric for like 23, and I'm going to be like, see, it's the two and the three, and that represents something. And then
why don't you make it something biblical? Like, what's the 23?
That's what I'm saying. Biblical and Afrocentric all at the same time. That's what we are. We're Christians and we're black. Come on.
I like it.
So we want you guys to continue to subscribe to the podcast. If you're not subscribed to the podcast, please go do that right now on iTunes. We also want you to listen on the Satchel app as well, created by our award-winning producer, Bo York. And we want you guys to rate and review the podcast on iTunes. We've been getting some great reviews. It's funny, we're going to talk about a trip that I took recently, and I actually got to meet some Pass the Mic listeners, and so want to shout them out as well here in a little bit. But you guys have the opportunity to leave a review, which gets us in front of more eyes and into more ears, and that advances the podcast. So it takes you just a couple of minutes to go on the Pass the Mic podcast page and rate and review, so go do that. Now, Jamar, let's get into it. What are some trips that you've taken recently? I'm going to talk about a trip, but you're a world traveler. You're a globetrotter. So what are some trips that you've taken recently?
Oh, man, that's funny that you say that because you're the one that's been on the road. But I'll humor you. We talked about this last week. Was just in Indianapolis for the Gospel Coalition National Conference, which happens every other year.
Yeah,
this might have been their biggest one yet. They say there were 8,000 attendees, and so we got to go to that. But honestly, that's my last trip.
You can hear the recap of that in the previous. See, Jamar, you got to get better at these segues. You got to get better at these segues.
I got to get the plug. Uh-huh. I got to get better at podcast promotion. But yes, it's there. And it's last week's episode, and so that was an interesting trip. The travel on that was horrendous, and I sent a very strongly worded review to Delta Airlines. But that's my last trip till the end of the semester. So from here on out, just hitting the books, grading papers, writing papers, and then afterwards it'll kick back up again in the summer.
Awesome, man. Well, I actually had the opportunity to go to Birmingham, Alabama, which is about 4 hours north of Pensacola, Florida, where I'm at. Yeah, it's interesting because Birmingham has some very significant history when it comes to race relations in America. At one point, it was called Bombingham. It is a very serious city. It's got some landmarks that are infamous and famous all at the same time. So was actually able to go up there for a college conference called Converge. And I've spoken at Converge the past 4 years. It's run by my homie, Tim Johnson, up in Memphis, Tennessee. And he started it, and it's interesting because it was predominantly a black, student conference. And it's really interesting because now this year it was very mixed in ethnicity. Okay. And the theme was race, truth, and reconciliation. And so we were able to have some talks about what it means to be reconciled and what that looks like within our immediate context, what social justice looks like, et cetera. And so it was a very, very helpful conference. So I just want to shout out all the Pastor Mike listeners that I was able to meet there. So Yannick and Daniel and Claire and Matthew, and I'm trying to think of others, Ben and Cam Pugh, the pastor down there at Iron City Church. And there's just so many others that I'm just failing to keep off the top of my head. But shout out to you guys. It was a very, very encouraging experience. And what I've seen is, you know, people in their 20s and in that college age, they're very receptive to this. Yes. It's interesting. When you go to kind of a young adults or college conference, you can say some things and they'll really receive it and listen to it. When it's an older crowd, you've kind of, I don't want to say set in your ways, but it's definitely something that's maybe harder to penetrate because there's so many years of ingrained bias and just the routines and the status quo has really pressed itself down into you. So it's something where you're a little bit more resistant to change in an older context. But, you know, as I told them, you know, sin exists in all age groups and age demographics. So it's just really helpful to hear that there's a mixed group of young people up in a historic city like Birmingham that are really pushing towards reconciliation and repenting and doing tangible things. It's just very encouraging to hear.
Well, you know, there, I keep coming back to this, the Lord recently brought it to mind that his kingdom is like a mustard seed. You know, it starts small, but it grows and it spreads.
Preach, Jamar Tisby.
It's just so relevant because as we look at sort of racial reconciliation, racial justice movements, it can seem like there aren't very many out there who are willing to sort of overcome their fears of loss of comfort, reputation, who are able to sacrifice and do the things that this work really requires. But the reality is it don't take much, right? Jesus started with 12 apostles to bring his message to the globe, and look where it is now. And so in a similar way, he's still building and spreading his kingdom. And while we may not be a very large group, we're present and it's growing. And I think what you're talking about with these young people, because I see it too, I'm on a college campus, you know, multiple days a week for school, and it's there. I mean, these folks are passionate, they're informed, they're faithful, and it gives me hope.
Yeah, and there's this capacity for learning things very quickly and advancing very quickly on the journey towards justice that I really admire about the younger generation. And, you know, I'm part of that younger generation. And I think about where I was 3 or 4 years ago, as I've talked about before on the podcast, and where I am now, that we can really consume large amounts of information quickly, process it, and keep moving and apply that into our daily lives. And so I think the church in some ways is threatened a bit by younger people speaking about justice and feels a little bit uncomfortable with maybe our boldness or the ways in which we're saying things. And I think it's important for us to be challenged and to be humble and open to the reality that we don't know everything. We're going to have to extend some grace and some mercy to our brothers and sisters who are trying to advocate for and trying to bring into this fight. But at the same time, I think it's really important for the church to make a conscious effort not to discourage young people who are pushing for justice, but to steer young people who are pushing for justice. And it's really important for us not to miss the fact that, and I tweeted this after a recent conference, we have a lot to learn, but we are still useful as we're learning. You know, we really do have something to contribute to this broader conversation. And in 10 years, we're going to be in positions of influence, or even sooner than that, be in positions of influence to really make a dent in congressional, legislative, executive, church, denominational decisions and really chart the course of the future. So it's important for us. And I know there's hesitation because we don't always say things the right way and we don't always do things the right way. But the previous generation didn't either. So I think, I hope we get the same grace extended to us. I'm not trying to start a generational war here. I'm just saying, I hope we get the same grace extended to us that any other generation would want.
But this proves true in, you know, pretty much every justice movement, right? There's the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee in the Civil Rights Movement was a bunch of college students. And even high school students helped to start the sit-in movement, which caught on. And the thing that's so difficult about intergenerational justice movements is that the older generation pushed as much as they could in many instances in their own time. Mm-hmm. And because of their push, the next generation gets to push it a bit further.
Yes.
But because they're pushing it further than you did, you get uncomfortable. And you're like, wait a minute, that's not what worked for us. So y'all rein it in a little bit. But the reality is we're all building on each other's work. And so the challenge even for our generation is to say the things that have worked for us now in this social media generation and blogs and websites and podcasts, that may not be what the next generation uses. And they may not say things the same way we say things,
right.
But what they're trying to do without perhaps always being conscious of it is to build on the foundation that previous justice workers have laid. And I think that's what we're confronting now as we're wading into race and justice and truth. But like you said, we need to be guided, not shut down.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really important for us to be open as well to correction, to be open to the leadership of others. But I think even the ways in which we conceive of justice now, it's moving at such an aggressive clip and moving at such an aggressive rate that if the church is not careful, if it rejects the voices of young people, it will become really out of touch with what social justice actually looks like in the public square and have the Christian perspective to speak into it. And I think young people are that connection. It's funny because we've said this before. We're not radical by the standards of what the world would consider radical. And we're just a little bit maybe more radical than some in the church will be comfortable with. And so it's important for us to, while affirming orthodoxy, make sure that we're kind of a bridge to and let the church and kind of illuminate what the church should do and should say in this season, at least to let them know this is what people are thinking. This is where the conversation is going. These are some of the new voices that are being heard and spread around and proliferated within the justice conversation. I think that's useful to the church. Now, we may not have it in a senior leadership capacity. Maybe our influence is grassroots instead, but I think the church, I'm just concerned. That's all. I just hope that the church would hear and listen.
That's a good word, man. That's a good word.
So let's talk about this journey towards wokeness that you are so fond of, Jamar. Let's talk about all you and all your woke friends, you and all your fully awake friends. You just hear explain why you use the word woke, Jamar? Because I can't stand it. I'm tricked into using it. I'm tripped into it because it's just such a cultural thing. But my disdain for the word continues to grow and build into a cascading avalanche. So let me know why you use woke.
Well, obviously, I feel like I'm stepping into a trap here because you got your animal ready, you know, whatever. So I think, you know, just to set it up, we have different views on the utility of the word. And honestly, to our listeners, Tyler and I haven't had this conversation in depth anymore. So you're going to see, you know,
right here. All the arguments we've been thinking about.
Everything going on. And I'm not a debater, so I'll just put that out there right now. He might eviscerate me, but that's fine. Whatever. I still think it's a good term. So, you know, there's a cultural definition. When you say woke, I think, and you may add nuance to this, when folks say they are woke or someone is woke, it really means that they are conscious of the racial, ethnic, and cultural dynamics at play in the world today, particularly the United States. And so to be woke would be to be aware of some of the racial history of our nation, to be aware in particular of the systemic and institutional manifestations of racism, what Emerson and Smith would call a racialized society, where so many of the most important factors in life, from health, life expectancy, birth mortality rates to income and education, all those things can unfortunately fall along racial lines. And black and brown people tend to have the worst outcomes along those measures. And so to be woke means to have an awareness of that. And then I think it means even going further than being aware, it's in some sense pushing against the cultural inertia that would keep the status quo of a racialized social hierarchy and to try to work against that system so that it's more equal for all. So I think in a cultural sense that's there, it gets abused, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But mm-hmm. I like the language in particular because I think, you know, the Bible talks about being awake all the time. Isaiah 52.
See, here you go.
It says,
here
you go. Awake, put on your strength, O Zion. It talks about, you know, Jesus to the disciples praying, couldn't you stay awake for even a little while I was with you? And then it talks about always staying awake and being ready for the return of the Lord. And then even in a personal salvation sense, being awakened to the salvation of the Lord and the truth that Jesus Christ is Lord. And so, you know, in a sense, being asleep and blind to our own sins and then waking up. And then even in the Luke 15 with the prodigal son, when it says he came to himself, it's like a sudden, like jumping out of a trance. Mm-hmm. And I feel like for many of us, because we're born into this racialized society and it's in this atmosphere, we are deadened or asleep to the pernicious ways that race functions. And then when we're woke, it's like we come to ourselves. We finally see in a truer way what's actually going on, and then we can respond appropriately. So, I mean, for all those reasons, I don't mind the term woke.
See, here you go with all this, I'm not a debater. Let me present 5 points and some scripture. Listen, this is my issue with the word woke. Okay, this is my issue.
Come with it.
My issue is that it's too final. It seems like it is a static position. And it seems like a static position that we should all attain to. And I'm telling you, I think that is an improper way of framing the justice conversation. I think we are always pursuing justice. And I think that we are always striving towards something that we will never fully see here on earth. And what I think the term woke sometimes gives the impression of is that if we call you woke, especially if you're within majority culture, that you have crossed a threshold. And that threshold now makes you an acceptable authority on the justice conversation. And I think that's improper because we're all slowly figuring out the ways in which we'll never really get around the justice conversation, that we'll never actually be able to stand on a perch or a plateau and actually say, hey, I've attained full sight on everything. I can see all the ways in which race and class and gender have interplayed into oppressive systems, have been institutionalized and caused bias and bigotry and discrimination. I don't think we'll ever get there until glory. And so because we can't fully see that, why would we give this impression that we cross some magical threshold? What makes one woke? Like what actually makes you woke? Because you read a book? Like you read Between the World and Me and now you're woke. You know, like how does this?
That's a good start.
No, you read. Yeah, it's a good. I mean, read the Bible first, of course, you know, and then outside of that, read Between the World and Me. OK, great. Now, what does that actually mean? And it doesn't actually presuppose that you're acting. It just presupposes that you're aware of something. Right. So just because you're awoke or woke to something doesn't mean you actually act to change that which you're woke to. And so for me, I'm just sitting back and saying, why are we giving this tag and this label to people, even to ourselves, when we're relatively new to the justice conversation? So I think sometimes it gets thrown around loosely. I totally understand that it's slang. And even before this call, you know, frankly, I used it just because it's so ingrained in my mind. You know, we're having a conversation. I was like, oh, yeah, you know, whatever, because that's the way in which we talk about it. But I really hate that it's become this mentality, because it also kind of gives this stamp of approval idea that I think is dangerous people will let us down. People will fail us, and we will fail each other. And I think when we have this anticipation that because we're woke, now we know exactly what to say and we know how to operate in every single environment, I think it really denies the fact that we're all still struggling to push back sin in our own hearts, and the sin which has been ingrained into us by our cultural preferences and has been ingrained into us by the world at large. So that's why I'm very sensitive to using it, because it seems so loose, so undefined. Like, what does that actually mean? How do you cross that threshold? And well, I don't think it really has podcast. Like an action. Listen, you've already laid it out. That's the case. You should have wrote the article, man.
Oh, man. Yeah, well, maybe. But three things. So I hear what you're saying. Woke can be static. It can be like this line you cross, and once you've crossed it, you're done. You know, you're a finished product, mm-hmm. and you've got the you know, good social justice stamp of approval, whatever it might be. I would say a few things. Number one, there is a hashtag that says, okay. Number one, there is a difference between some folks who quote unquote get it about race and those who don't. And so we mm-hmm. need to have some sort of terminology, right? So there, you and I both know that we have our critics, and many of those critics don't have the slightest clue about the racial context of this nation, about the way race functions in the 21st century. And it's really hard to communicate with those folks because they just don't even have kind of a basic framework for understanding the dialogue. And then there are those who do. So like folks in the Pass the Mic group, by and large, even though it's thousands of people now, we can't attest for every single person. But a lot of the people contributing to the conversation do have a level of awareness and can speak with some nuance that, you know, we don't have to deal with some of the same levels of like building basic knowledge that we do in the broader sphere. So that's one. Number two, there is a hashtag that says get woke, stay woke. And I think that kind of talks
too many words, bro. Too many words.
It was four syllables. We could do it. It kind of speaks to this static nature of wokeness that you're talking about, which I think is valid. But there's a sense in which, yeah, get woke, but that's not it. Stay woke. In other words, keep up with what's actually going on. And not just current events, but against this idea that once you've had a revelation about race, it could have been on one particular topic or one particular situation, you're not done. There's a lifelong kind of journey like you're talking about, which is stay woke and wokeness. Mm. And then I would say lastly, not at all to equate wokeness with salvation, but there's a sense in which we can understand the dynamic in terms of the gospel, right? Whether your conversion was this moment in time that you can look back and name the date and the occasion, or if it mm-hmm. was a gradual realization at some point, you turn around and say, I was an unbeliever, now I'm a believer. Maybe you know exactly when that happened, maybe you don't, but there's a definite shift. And then along those same lines, if you have accepted the gospel, that doesn't mean you're a complete project at all. Mm-hmm. To say that you've converted, to say that you're a Christian, doesn't mean that you aren't continually being sanctified and you're on a journey to be more and more like Jesus Christ. And so again, not at all to equate wokeness with salvation, but in a similar sense of being on a journey, you can look back and say, well, there was a time when racial issues weren't really on my radar. Now they are. I can't tell you exactly how or when that happened, but they are. Mm-hmm. And because they are, because I think this is part of the definition of being truly woke, because these issues are now on your radar, you continue to pursue them. You continue to not only inform yourself, but as you do, take action. And so I think what needs to happen is stuff like this podcast, where we do flesh it mm-hmm. out so that people don't think it's this one-time thing. I read an article, I'm done. I read a book, I'm done. I had a conversation, I'm done. No, that's only the beginning, and it's a lifelong mm-hmm. journey. So it's valid.
Yeah, so I think that's a really good pushback. I would say that the way in which the salvation comparison or parallel, I would say that that's actually why I don't like the word, because for salvation, there are clear marks of those who are saved, right? There are clear marks, like it's like a supernatural thing. So there are clear marks of those who are saved. And I don't think we've really figured out yet what is a clear mark of those who are woke. And I think people would look at us and say, you're not woke because of our positions on certain issues. Oh no, you're not really woke. You're woke if you believe all the things that make you awake, you know? And so I think again, it's so nebulous to me. And I understand your pushback, and I think it's good. And listen, Jamar, I'm not gonna get upset if you use the word, okay? If you wanna use woke, it's fine. It's fine, Jamar.
We can still be brothers.
I'm gonna try to break the habit on my own. That's all I'm saying. So I'm gonna try to break the habit.
Isn't this in some sense the problem with all language, right? Like, what does it mean to be conservative or Republican or Democrat or progressive? There's always the problem of definitions, and that's sort of part of the richness of
even racism. Racism is the biggest one, right, for us. You know, what is racism?
So yeah, prime example, right? And you know, so I'm wondering, like, is that a problem with the term woke in and of itself, or is this part of simply humans using language and having different perspectives, and would it lend itself then to more dialogue rather than jettisoning the term? Because if you have an issue with the term woke, what replaces it, if anything, you know? And that's another conversation to have.
Yeah, probably nothing. That's what I would say, honestly, like probably nothing. I think even with terms like conservative, liberal, or racism, there's clear descriptors. There's clear examples of what those look like. And if you are a conservative, you believe these things based upon a party that adheres to conservatism, which is the Republican Party, right? Or if you are a liberal, you believe these things based upon a party that adheres to a liberal agenda, which is the Democratic Party. Now, there's a spectrum there, but that doesn't mean that there's almost this nebulous sense that there's nothing that defines you. And I think sometimes Black Lives Matter is seen as the defining woke, or I don't know, whatever it may be, is seen as this is what is defined as someone being woke. And I don't think there's really necessarily a category. Like, I can point to racism and I can say there are examples that we can give that can show what racism actually is. I don't know. I think there are examples that we can show of people pursuing justice. Woke. See, if you're woke and then you pursue justice, I think that's two different things. Like, I think, okay, now you step outside of just being woke, and now you're actually going to chase justice. Now you're actually going to go after being just as, you know, something that you won't ever attain on this earth, but you will reach one day in glory, right? I think woke is like, okay, this is kind of stasis. This is like mentality, like, wow, I see all this stuff. Now let me actually go and do this stuff. And so that's why, for me, the language in and of itself is just weak. Now, again, if you use it, I don't know what replaces it. I think nothing should replace it. I think we should all pretty much be pursuing justice. And some of us are a little bit further along in that journey than others. But hey, again, Jamar, I'm not going to get upset if you use woke.
Well, here's
using it on a podcast. We'll just bleep it out. It's okay.
I'm not convinced. I still like the term. I think what we're talking about is fleshing it out, because especially on social media and a hashtag, right? It's one of these terms that gets thrown out there and used a lot of different ways with really no center, Jamar. Right?
Exactly, but, Jamar.
But that doesn't mean we can't have one, or at least amongst, you know.
Who decides what the center is? Who decides what the center is?
We're the voices on this podcast, so we can't.
See, but see, here's the thing. As soon as you step outside of the podcast, you step outside of the passing mic group, who decides?
Maybe, but I think the way it's used, especially because it's typically on social media that I hear, or in particular articles, it's centered around racial issues, justice issues, and at minimum, it means a degree of information that one has probably intentionally sought out, which I think is helpful.
I think that's
because,
fair. Yeah, that's fair.
You know, there are plenty of people who don't have that information and don't seek it, right? And so the framework I use is this. I use, and I think I've done podcasts on this, so shout out to another podcast. You can look this up. It's called The Arc of Racial Awareness. And Arc of Racial Reconciliation. And it's an acronym that stands for Awareness, Relationships, and Commitment. And the way I explain awareness, sometimes I equate it to being woke, right? Like, it is a component of racial reconciliation and racial justice. It is a necessary component, but it is not sufficient. And so in that component of awareness or wokeness, I say, inform yourself, equip yourself with knowledge, because there is a basic framework for understanding racial and social dynamics and cultural and ethnic dynamics that you have to have if you want to take action and not do harm, right? Because there can be a lot of zeal, but you can also run roughshod over the people you're trying to serve. And one of the best ways to prevent against that is to increase your awareness, particularly, I'm a budding historian, so I always push history books.
You the doctor, Dr. Tisby.
Not for 5 or 6 more years, but whatever. So I use it within a framework because I agree that's not the end game or the whole game, but it's an essential part of the game that we can't overlook. So, yeah.
Absolutely. No, I think that's really good. That's the best explanation I've ever heard of it.
Well, thanks. But yeah, it's a good discussion to have because it actually is part of a bigger discussion of how, when, and if Christians should use secular terms, if you want to call it that. I really,
Man, that's a whole series of podcasts.
That's a whole series of podcasts. But, to what degree can Christians utilize the terms of a world that is maybe non-Christian or in some cases even anti-Christian? Can we chew the meat and spit out the bones, or is using the word at all just confusing and stick either to a completely different vocabulary or strictly to biblical language? Now, it sounds real religious to only use biblical words, but I think personally, spending 5 years in seminary and getting equipped with all this Reformed theology actually gives me a filter and a framework to look at knowledge being generated by non-Christians and say, because of common grace, they might stumble upon some truth, even though they don't have the ground of all truth, which is faith in God, but they can still get it right sometimes. And can I use that? Can I utilize that bit of truth without absorbing all of the worldview that goes along with it? And so that's why I think this conversation matters much more than simply one term and whether we ought to use that one term.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree with you there. And listen, we're going to have a part two of this conversation because we just off the cuff decided to talk about wokeness. And clearly you had a file ready that you were prepared with.
Well, we got to get Bo on here. He's going
to
be mad.
Yeah, we got to talk about it. We got to get Bo on to talk about it. But it would be remiss of us to not conclude the podcast without at least talking about the resurrection, which this is the weekend where we're recording it. It is actually Good Friday. And so for many people, this is a time where we is of great significance to us as Christians to recognize the crucifixion, the death, burial, and resurrection of our Savior, Jesus Christ. And it would also be remiss of me to fail to mention the Christians who were killed in Egypt on Palm Sunday. Yeah. And the bombings by the Islamic State. It would be remiss of me not to just commemorate their example of really, truly what it looks like to stand in the face of persecution, what it looks like to stand and believe and to continue to worship a living God in the midst of people who want to kill you. And that is something that it took me quite a while just to sit back and really think about, in what ways have I been silent and ashamed about my faith? And I don't think it's necessarily always something for us to just do a one-to-one comparison, but I think it's definitely something that we must think about as we continue to pursue reconciliation, that The resurrection is at the core of that, that we believe that Christ died, but he also rose again, and he's coming back to establish his kingdom, and then all things will be made new. He will renew all things. And so it is definitely something that we are joyful about, but especially on a time like Good Friday and the Saturday preceding Easter, Resurrection Sunday, it is definitely something for us to reflect upon and to think deeply about, even as we push towards reconciliation.
Well, the gut-wrenching loss of human life, and in this case, Christians, reminds me that we are one body. And I think, yes, you know, with all of our different denominations, with all of the sort of sectarian strife and conflict that we get into over issues that aren't even of salvific importance, a tragedy like what happened in Egypt on Palm Sunday reminds me that the way Christ views his church, he's not viewing it strictly in terms of, well, that's the U.S. church, that's the Egyptian church. No, this is his church universal. This is one body. And when one part of the body hurts, we all hurt. And so I'm trying to learn to hurt along with my brothers and sisters whom I've never met and probably never will meet in this life, but who are united to me and I to them by the Holy Spirit through faith in Jesus Christ, by the will of God the Father. And we must remember that. So I'm thankful for Karen Ellis, who is our resident global church expert, who always keeps it on our radar. I recommend,
yes,
that you access her materials on the website. Just look up Karen Ellis, as well as we've had her on the podcast several times. And so you can search for hers. She's got great insights as to the global church. But in the midst of death, there is life. And as we record, yes, this, it is Good Friday, when Christ was crucified and killed in the flesh. But we know Sunday's coming. So
Sunday coming, fam. Sunday's coming.
What y'all got planned at your church?
We are actually, it's funny, it's our 25th year church anniversary. So we are actually going to put it off, the celebration of that anniversary, to kind of make it all about Christ. So we're just going to put that off to the end of this month, but we're planning a big celebration service, but we boosted up our services. So we're doing a one more than normal. And, we have a lot of unbelievers and family coming in. And actually there's 50 to 60 family members that are coming in on my dad's side. Wow. Some of them are unbelievers. Most of them have heard the gospel before. Maybe some have believed and some have not. So it's going to be a great opportunity to share the gospel with them and love on them and reach out to some specific areas within our community that we thought desperately needed to be around some believers and to hear the gospel. So we're looking forward to inviting them and welcoming them, and just joyful, man, just very joyful that we're going to get to worship with a diverse group of people, and probably more diverse than normal for our church, predominantly Black church. And that's going to be good for us to see that the body is bigger than just our little four walls, as you were saying earlier. So we're excited to worship the risen King and eat some good food and ride some horses and do all that good stuff, man.
Wait, how'd you just go throw that in there? What, ride some horses?
Yeah, man, I grew up around horses, man. My dad has horses. I'm dead serious.
Tyler D. Okay. All right. Well,
I can't really ride him a lot because of my, I have allergies. So the dander, I'm actually allergic to the dander. Wow. So it causes my eyes to puff up, but I ride whenever I can.
And that's like part of your regular annual Easter tradition?
Nah, it's just because family's going to be there. So because family's going to be there, we're just going to get out there and just ride horses. That's good, just what, man, we do.
I'm not hating.
Why are you laughing, man? So what, like, you saying? You can't be woke and ride horses. Is that what you're saying? Okay.
I didn't know you were going that direction. Like, you were talking about the resurrection and Easter and evangelism, and then you bring up
he coming horses. Back on a white horse, fam. Right. He coming back.
All right. That's good. Yeah, man. Well, you know, it's always kind of hard for us because of where Easter falls on the calendar. We're usually not near family. I mean, our closest family is 9 hours away. So it's actually a good reminder that, you know, whoever does the will of God Jesus said, is his mother and brother and sister.
That's right.
And so we get to celebrate with our spiritual family at church. And we're in a little tiny town, so it's not going to be big or elaborate, but it will be special. And it's a weird feeling. Like, I always get torn, you know, with the liturgical calendar and celebrating Easter. But every Sunday, in a sense, you know, we celebrate the resurrection. And so,
yes,
you know, on one level, this is not a Sunday that's drastically different than any other. But I do think, because we are in flesh embodied beings with short memories and whose rituals help shape us, it is important to celebrate this annually on the calendar as a reminder, a specific reminder, specific Sunday set aside to recall what Christ did, his passion, his resurrection, and his coming return.
Amen, brother. That's right. That's a good word, man. Hopefully we never forget it, and we don't limit it to just one Sunday, man. And get out there, worship with some believers. Oh, by the time this is up, you will already have worship with some believers, but do it again this Sunday. The liturgical calendar continues. It yet continues. So thank you guys again for tuning in and joining us on this episode of Pass the Mic. Again, we want you to rate and review the podcast on iTunes and also on the Satchel app as well. Join the private Pass the Mic Facebook group. It is over 3,000 people, cross-denominational, cross-generational, and then also multi-ethnic, of people working out what it means to actually pursue justice and to be faithful members of the body of Christ.
Who are woke.
And as always... Yes. According to you, they are woke. So if we find non-woke people in there, I'm just going to point them to you.
Hey, I'll let you handle that. I'm about to for all 3,000, but.
See how he just slides out of that? Anyway. Well, thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you soon on the next Pass the Mic.
You've been listening to Pass the Mic, a Podastery production. To find out more about this and other shows, visit podastery.com. That's podastery.com.
This episode was brought to you in part by the Compelled Podcast, which uses gripping, immersive storytelling to bring Christian testimonies to life. Listen to missionaries, addicts, martyrs, and more who have seen Jesus at work in unbelievable ways. Listen on your podcast app or compelledpodcast.com.